Good morning. Before we begin, Earl is going to lead us in prayer, and then we'll just get into the study.
Father in heaven, we're grateful to you for this opportunity to gather together as brothers and sisters of Christ, sharing a common interest in your word, common interest in understanding it more perfectly, that we might apply the principles and precepts that we find within its pages to our lives to help us serve you more faithfully and gain strength from them as well. Pray that you can Rick and the teachers this morning as they present the material they prepared. Help us all, Father, to be receptive to what we hear and learn and make the proper application in our lives, that we might serve you more effectively and that it might be faith building, and help us to live lives that honor you. In Jesus' name.
Amen. Well, we're continuing our study in the parable of Jesus, and the parable this morning is entitled The Faith of a Mustard Seed, or at least that's what I've entitled it. You might have a different perspective on what it should be called, and we did have one parable related to the mustard seed early on in this study, and we're kind of getting into some parables that are a little more obscure in some ways, you know, ones we don't just know by name or things such as that, and that's because we're running out of parables. So we're kind of going back and getting some out of the depths there. And we have enough for February, but like I said, I've entitled it The Faith of a Mustard Seed, and it's from Luke chapter 17 and verses 1 through 10. So let's just go ahead and read that before we start here. Should have had my Bible ready, but I was not there. I could just read it off the paper, but it just doesn't feel the same sometimes to do that. So Luke 17, 1 through 10, and I've actually included the context in here because I think it pertains to the parable very closely. And he said to his disciples, "It is inevitable that stumbling blocks should come, but woe to him through whom they come. It would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were thrown into the sea, than he should cause one of these little ones to stumble. Be on your guard. If your brother sins, rebuke him. And if he repents, forgive him. And if he sins against you seven times a day and returns to you seven times saying, 'I repent,' forgive him." And the apostles said to the Lord, "Increase our faith." And the Lord said, "If you had faith like a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, 'Be uprooted and be planted in the sea,' and it would obey you. But which of you, having a slave plowing or tending sheep, will say to him when he has come to him from the field, 'Come immediately and sit down to eat'? But will he not say to him, 'Prepare something for me to eat and properly clothe yourself and serve me until I have eaten and drunk, and afterward you will eat and drink'? He does not thank the slave because he did the things which were commanded, does he? So you too, when you do all the things which are commanded, you say, 'We are unworthy slaves. We have only done that which we ought to have done.'" And when you read this passage, if it were not for the but joining verses 6 and 7, what Jesus says in verses 7 through 10, it, to me anyway, seems to be completely unrelated to what he says in verse 6. Which seems to be a complete left field answer to what the apostles request of him in the first place: increase our faith. Hey, I just gave you the answer to question one if you didn't know it. What question do the apostles ask Jesus here? Increase our faith. You know, that's, you know, we just starting a new year. What a great resolution, isn't it? To increase our faith. And, you know, I remember being confused the first time I read this passage, maybe the first 100 times I read this passage. Here are the apostles asking Jesus for something that as a Christian, I wanted for myself. I wanted my faith increased. And then Jesus responds with this phrase about a mustard seed that, you know, if you had that kind of faith, you know, you could throw trees into the ocean. And then he continues by talking about a master and servant relationship. When the servant does everything he's supposed to do, he's still unprofitable. And I'm like, well, how does that help me increase my faith? What in this text helps us. And it didn't seem very helpful to me, not the first time I read it, nor maybe the 100th time I've read it. And maybe you had that same experience with this passage. How is this related to the apostles' request? But I would suggest, as is often the case, if we just take some time and consider what Jesus says, we will see that it's very closely related, and he does deal with their request. Well, let's consider, first of all, the context of the question the apostles, or the request the apostles make of Jesus here. What does Jesus say in verses 1 through 4 that might explain the reason for their request? Summarize that if you can. Why might they be asking Jesus in this particular context to increase their faith? Les?
It is difficult to see the bridge what's relative about a number of these passages. But I mean, I thought about he's saying don't be a stumbling block to others because, you know, there's a really strong warning there about
be on guard, he says in verse 3. Yeah.
And certainly the disciples or the apostles want to know what that is to be a stumbling block because certainly want to avoid that. And then the willingness to forgive others, up this 7 times a day is what he says, of course. So it seems like it could be the relationship between the two seems to be that if they're asking for a sense of surety or discernment in how to weigh, the right from the wrong and the how to behave in a way that shows faith, perhaps.
And I think you're right. And the way I was kind of looking at it is they're saying, Lord, we need help with this one. You're asking us not to be stumbling blocks. You're asking, that this person comes to me who sinned against me and he asks me my forgiveness and he keeps doing the same thing over and over again. What is our tendency in a situation? You want to write the person off. This guy's never going to change. He does it over and over again. He's never going to change. How can I deal with this? And I'm not quoting my wife, okay? That's the situation. And I think sometimes we want to just say, forget about them. But that's not the attitude we should have, is it? As Christians, that's not the attitude we should have. And we have to remember that the person Jesus is talking about is somebody who has been rebuked and has repented and is seeking forgiveness. So that's the context, and we have to recognize that. But we still have to be willing to forgive them as long as they're seeking forgiveness. And sometimes that is a challenge. And you want to say, I'm tired of this. I don't want to put up with this person anymore. But as long as they're striving to serve God and seek forgiveness, then we need to do it. And I think that's kind of their response. It's like, increase our faith, Lord. This is a tough one. This is going to be challenging. And, the context is interesting. And if you look over at Matthew 18, 1 through 11, Jesus, we're not going to look at that because we don't have time this morning, but it's a great commentary on being a stumbling block and who it is. And it's very interesting. Who in verse 1 is Jesus addressing, does it say? His disciples. But who asked the question? The apostles. And there is a distinction there. And he says in verse 2, he says, if you cause any of these little ones to stumble. And I think he's saying, if you cause anybody who's sincerely striving to follow me to stumble, if you're a stumbling block for them, if you're discouraging them, you need to be on guard about that. You do not need to be the stumbling block. And it doesn't matter how many times they're coming to you seeking forgiveness. You need to be encouraging and helping them. And it makes me think of what we're told in Isaiah 42 in verse 3. It says, a bruised reed he will not break, and a burning wick he will not extinguish. And we're told that in Matthew 18, I believe it is, or Matthew 12, that this prophecy is about Jesus. A smoldering wick or a dimly burning wick he will not extinguish, and a bruised reed he will not break. As long as somebody's hanging on, as long as they're trying, he's not going to cast them aside. And isn't that the way we want God to be with us? How many times do we sin against him and seek his forgiveness? For the same thing. You know, shouldn't we be that way toward our brother and sister who are striving to please him as well?
Were the Pharisees still in the group?
I don't get any impression that the Pharisees are. I think this discussion, and especially beginning after verse 5, is pretty much between Jesus and the apostles. I think the disciples he's mentioning are those who are following him, but then you've got the apostles who have been with him for 3 years, you know, serving him nearly 3 years at this point. But I believe this helps us understand the apostles' request here of increase our faith. This is a challenging thing Jesus is asking them to do, it seems to me. Well, let's look at Jesus' response, but before we consider it, and that's in verses 6 through 10, I want to answer one question, and that is question number 3. Did we answer question number 2? Yes, thank you. Is the apostles' request for Jesus to increase their faith a reasonable one? I'm asking the question for a reason, so just be on guard about that. Explain your answer. Is this a reasonable request the apostles are making of Jesus? Yes. Earl saying yes. Do you want to explain your answer?
Yeah. They're asking him to teach them how to increase their faith.
No, that's not what they say. I don't mean to cut you off.
Well, increase their faith.
Their request is what? What is their request in the text?
Increase our faith.
Increase our faith. Okay, so that's okay. That's I didn't mean to cut you off and be, but just let's pay attention. You know, don't interpret. Let's see what they're actually asking. Okay, sorry, Earl. You know how I am, Earl. You can't even. I love you, brother, and you know that. So, but anyway, you think? But go ahead. What was your point?
Well, here's what I was going to say. Whether you disagree with it or not.
I'm sure I do, because it's going to ruin my class if I agree with it. I can tell. But go ahead.
They're not asking him, or they're not expecting him to miraculously increase their faith. They're not asking for a miracle. I think they're asking him to teach or impart or aid them in some way, however you want to say it, to increase their faith. But they're not asking him to do a miracle.
Okay, and that's what you're, and I understand your perspective.
Yeah.
And if that's what they're asking, that to aid them and help them and to teach them how to increase their faith, I think you're exactly right. It's reasonable. But if they're asking Jesus just to increase their faith, then I think it is unreasonable. And the reason I'm asking that question and go in that direction is because I think what Jesus says here in this parable about the servant serving the master is actually dealing with that issue, that they are asking him to increase their faith without having to do anything for it. So that's my perspective. So if you're right, I want to hear why your explanation is for the parable after that, why he goes into this parable. So anybody else dare say something? Yes, Evelyn.
I feel like if someone sins against you over and over again, yes, even though you don't feel it in your heart, you tell the Lord, I forgive them in faith. You're asking, telling God, I forgive them, but I don't feel it yet. But after that, you always do feel a peace.
And that actually may apply to what we're going to be talking about. Probably shortly. But so I have a particular view that their request is unreasonable here. And Earl stated really the other view, that they're not asking for some miraculous, you know, increasing of their faith, that they're asking Jesus to teach them how to increase their faith. And both of them may actually fit with this, but you know, you'll understand that hopefully if I can make this clear, the perspective I'm coming from. Any other comments before we move on? Brian, you look like you're itching to say something.
No, I'm not going to touch anything.
Okay. Smart man. I'm sorry. I just like, I got to be careful. I'm sorry. You know I do it in love, I hope. Here's the way I look at it, and this is just kind of the summary before we get there. We're going to talk about verse 6 before we talk about 7 through 10. But 2 Thessalonians, you know, 3:10 teaches, if anyone will not work, what?
Neither
let him eat. What has that to do with this? If you want your faith increased, you don't just ask for it. There's a spiritual application. you work for it. There's something you have to do to have that done. And I almost think that's what Jesus is dealing with in the latter part of his response. Now, it could be something else, and Earl and I will discuss that later, I'm sure, if I know Earl and me and the way we do these things. But, well, let's look at his initial response in verse 6. What does Jesus say here in Luke 17 in verse 6? He said, "And the Lord said, if you had faith like a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it would obey you." And I'm going, you know, I go back again, increase our faith, and then, well, what good does this, you know, when you look at this, how does this helpful? It's like saying, going to your friend and say, hey, you know, I'm short on rent. Can you loan me $100 to pay my rent? And they said, you know, if you had as much money as Bill Gates, you could buy 100 houses and you wouldn't have to worry about it. I'm like, okay, but that doesn't help me with my situation right here. And that's kind of how I've looked at it. I go, how does this response help us increase our faith? What is it about what Jesus says here that gives us any indication of how our faith should be increased? Look at Matthew 17, 19 through 20. And this is a similar passage, a different context. This is where the disciples could not cast out, I believe, a demon in this particular case. And notice what they asked Jesus. Then the disciples came to Jesus privately, verse 19, and said, "Why could we not cast it out?" And he said to them, "Because of the littleness of your faith. For truly I say to you, if you had faith as a mustard seed, you shall say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it shall move, and nothing shall be impossible to you." So that's his response there, and he uses the same comparison, a mustard seed. Why might Jesus use a mustard seed? This is question 4, by the way, to illustrate the type of faith the apostles should desire.
Mustard seed is very small.
Okay, it's very small.
It's
so
small, and it grows to be humongous.
Okay, and I think it's not just the fact that it's small. There's something I noticed as I was preparing for this class. I don't know if you use the New International Version, and I don't want to beat up on the New International Version here, but the way it translates this verse, it says, if you had faith as small as a mustard seed. The NASB, which we have in the text with the questions, and most other translations we would use, says if you had faith like or as a mustard seed. So if you had faith as small as a mustard seed, or if you had faith like or as a mustard seed. Do you see the distinction in those two interpretations or those two translations? What's the distinction?
One is implying size, physical size.
Yeah, one's interpreting it for us, isn't it? That the New International Version is saying, so you need, if you just had a little bit of faith, basically is what it's saying, you could do this. That I think that's unfortunate that the New International Version does that, because I don't think that's the point. Do the apostles have a little bit of faith? We just read. He rebuked them for their littleness of faith, and he's done that on more than one. They have a little faith. I mean, these men have been following him for nearly 3 years. They have left their families, they've left their jobs, they've left homes. They're exercising faith. They are demonstrating faith. So they have a little faith. So it's not saying if you just had a little bit of faith, you could handle this. He's saying if you had faith like a mustard seed, you could do this. And what was your point, Frank, about the mustard seed?
It's the tiniest seed there is.
It is, but...
And it grows to be humongous.
And I think that's what we have to understand. If we limit it to the size, then we're kind of losing the whole point of what Jesus is saying about the mustard seed. It may start out small, but it's alive, and it's growing, and it has the potential to be something great. And that's I think, the comparison. It's not just the, you know, you could say Rick's like a buffalo. Well, you could be talking about how big I am or how much noise I make when I walk around the house or how that I'm very insensitive to my wife or all these things like that. You know, it doesn't, it, you know, we can't, you know, it's, I think it's dangerous to specify, to interpret what that is. But I think Jesus is not implying that the apostles don't have a little bit of faith. Yes, Linda?
You could also make some kind of connection with the fact that mustard tree has such a large root system. because of the large root system, you know, it's able to do more.
Well, and I think that's something we have to recognize, that as we grow up and grow out, we also grow down and in and are strengthened. That's the way trees are. It's not just what you see above the surface, it's what's beneath the surface. And that's the faith Jesus is saying, if you had this kind of faith, and I don't think he's saying they don't have it. I think that's the point. Elaine?
And then to that point, too, I think I read that it also grows up and out with a lot of branches, and
yeah.
Especially birds like to
nest. Yeah, and if we studied Matthew 13, that was the point, that the birds of the sky come and nest in the branches, and that's more of a different application there. But I'm suggesting that when he says the mustard seed, he's talking about not just the size, but the quality kind of faith. Not that a mustard seed possesses faith, but it's growing, it's alive, it's active, and it has potential to be something great in the kingdom of heaven. And I think that really is the point. And the point, just to make it, if you had this kind of faith, you could do these things. You could say to this mulberry tree, be cast in the ocean. Or you could say to this mountain, move from here to there, and it would do it. Now, question five, you know, I hope we have the answer to this question. Maybe if you're different than me, then we're going to have a problem. Is Jesus teaching here that if one has enough faith, he will be able to perform supernatural acts? Is that his point? What's his point? If you had this kind of faith, you could do what? You could do what appears to be impossible. Things. What?
You can do big things, just like the mustard seed does big things. You can do big things.
Yeah, and remember that this conversation is really between Jesus and the apostles at this point. I think there's tremendous application to us. But what did they end up doing? I mean, they did miracles. They stood against the Jewish leaders. They stood up in the face of death. They healed people. They raised people from the dead. They suffered persecution. All because of their faith. And you know, the thing that's so encouraging, I think, when we read this is, I would imagine, unless our parents drug us in here this morning and we were coerced, we're here because we have at least a little bit of faith. And Jesus says, if you have that kind of faith, then you can do what may seem impossible to you. And that's the point. And when we think about, you know, the tree being cast into the ocean, I mean, that's a hyperbole. What, anybody know how to define a hyperbole? What's a hyperbole?
It's exaggeration.
Yeah, it's using exaggeration for effect. You know, Rick, you talk like an auctioneer. That doesn't mean I sound like an auctioneer. It means I speak too quickly. And Linda has accused me of that numerous times. But I do. I tend to speak quickly sometimes, especially when I have a lot of material to cover. So that's using exaggeration for emphasis. That's what he's doing. That's a hyperbole. You can do great things. And he's using the mustard tree and the mountain as the example. And, you know, and it seems to me there's a really, a very real sense where Jesus answers the apostles' request here, saying, you've got that kind of faith. You just need to keep exercising. I think that the mustard seed comparison almost is saying that if you have this kind of faith, then you're going to be able to do whatever you need to do in the kingdom of God. And that's exactly what they did. And I think the same is true of us. God will not allow us to be tempted beyond which we are able to bear. But with the temptation, will provide a means of escape. 1 Corinthians 10:13. Do we have faith? That's true. I believe we all do. Do we always take the route we're supposed to take? No. But we know that we can, because God has given us the ability and the strength. So that's verse 6 part of Jesus' response. If you had faith like a mustard seed, then you could do this. You could do what you need to do. What I'm asking you to do, really, is what Jesus is saying there. Let's look at 7 through 10, which hinges on my interpretation that the apostles' request is unreasonable. Now, we may be able to fit it in with the way Earl's interpreting it, that is a reasonable request. But I think when they ask Jesus to increase their faith, I think what they're saying is just increase our faith. Make it so we don't have to, you know, we can handle this stuff, you know, without us having to really try. I think maybe what they're, you know, and they, obviously they're with Jesus, who has done all these miracles. He can do whatever he needs to do. I can see why they might ask that question personally. All right. Let's read 7 through 10 again here, just to get it in front of us. And let me get back to the right chapter. But which of you, and that but makes the connection to the prior verses, doesn't it? But which of you, having a slave plowing or tending sheep, will say to him when he has come in from the field, come immediately and sit down to eat? But will he not say to him, prepare something for me to eat and properly clothe yourselves and serve me until I have eaten and drunk, and afterward you will eat and drink? He does not thank the slave because he did the things which were commanded, does he? So let's answer these questions here. All right, considering the immediate context and the request of the apostles here, who does the master in this parable represent? God?
Or Jesus?
Yeah, that's the same answer really when we think of it. But I would say Jesus. I would say Jesus is presenting himself as the master. They've made a request of Jesus. And I think he's presenting himself as the master in this parable. You may disagree with me on that. That's my interpretation. Doesn't have to be the right one. You know, I'm not saying I'm right and you're wrong, but that's my interpretation. So let's at least go there, because I'm teaching and I can lead the class. You can, you know, correct me afterwards or make some comment. But that's my interpretation, that he's presenting himself as the master. Who do the slaves represent? I think that's pretty obvious if you look at verse 10. Yeah, he applies this to them, doesn't he? He says, so you too, speaking to the apostles, it seems to me, when you have done all that is commanded you, what do you say? So that's, he's saying that they are the slaves. And, you know, my version says slaves. Yeah, I'm politically correct. I want to say servants. But we realize that slaves in New Testament and Bible times, it was not a racial thing at all. It was more of an economic thing for the most part a lot of times, or a conquering nation type thing. But it was not a racial thing. So, but you know, he says, you are. That's your position in this. All right, so he is the master, my interpretation. Apostles are the slaves, I think is pretty clear. God, at least God is the master. At the very least, then I think, you know, either way that works fine. So when the slave comes in from working in the field, question 8, and there's some questions right behind you on that lectern over there, Joe, if you want to get some. When the slave comes in from working in the field, what would the master not have him immediately do? Sit down and eat. Yeah, you don't come in and you don't sit down at the table. What two things does the slave need to do before he serves his master? Two things are mentioned here before he serves him. What?
Serve him.
Okay, before he serves him, he is to?
His clothes.
Yeah, change his clothes.
Prepare
his food. New American Standard has him preparing the food first. That doesn't seem very sanitary, but prepare his food and then change his clothes and then serve the master. At what point is the slave to sit down and eat? After the master has finished eating his meal. All right, so looking at this story, this parable, from a purely physical perspective, let's not go to the spiritual yet, from a purely physical perspective, what is the gist of this parable regarding the master and servant relationship? What's the point Jesus is making?
One is over the other. There's a pecking order.
Okay, there's a pecking order. That's certainly there. And what is the slave's responsibility? Who does he put first? His master. In everything, he puts his master first. He does his master's will and looks to his master's needs before he does anything else for himself. So that's the parable that Jesus is presenting here. So if this, which is what I believe it is Jesus' response to the apostles' request to increase their faith, what is the point he's making? What is he saying? Increase our faith, and then he tells them this parable about these servants that have to wait on his master, on their master before they're fed, before they're taken care of. What is the point he might be making here? Les?
Well, it seems as though he's in a way preparing them for what is coming. That Jesus.
Before you go too far, can I just the request of him is what? Increase our faith. Okay, and this is his response. If this is his response, how does that fit that request? So is that where you're going?
Well, I mean, I had a number of different thoughts about it. It may or may not fit into what you're...
Yeah, that's always the problem. If it doesn't fit into what I'm teaching, then we're gone. But anyway, go ahead.
There's definitely a recognition that he's trying to show the apostles of the relationship between him and them. And basically that it's not over yet. That if he's looking at the long view of this, that he's got some things to do here before their work almost really starts. And he's saying that, you know, that your work has just begun in a way. Because it's not easy. I mean,
That's why these are some of the parables were left at the very end. And if we didn't have a full-time evangelist, we were going to start, you know, going to the dregs. But they're not dregs. They're wonderful parables and stories and things, but they're challenging to understand.
The fact that the position that the apostles are in, being the chosen ones of the Lord, is a very privileged and honored position for them. But Jesus is saying, there's a lot of work and persecution to go before you sit down and eat.
Okay, and that's the direction I'm going. But I do think, and you may, if this is related to their question, how does that fit? Earl, you were going to say something?
Well, when we humble ourselves and serve God faithfully, the more and the longer we do that, I think that in and of itself is faith building. It helps increase our faith.
Yep. And I think, and anybody else want to speak before I cut you off and tell you I don't agree with you? And I'm not saying I don't agree with you, Les. You're going a different direction, and I think those are all valid points. And I think Earl's. Here's the way I'm looking at it. So they're asking for their faith to be increased, and then Jesus tells them this parable about a servant that before he sits down at the table, he needs to take care of his master. So if the sitting down at the table is having your faith increased, what do we have to do to have our faith increased? We have to serve God. We have to wait on God. We have to seek his kingdom and do his will. And it seems to me that's the point Jesus is trying to make here. You want your faith increased, then do what I tell you to do. Do what I've commanded you to do. Seek my will. In the real world, you know, I hire people all the time. And I fire quite a few of them, unfortunately. I let them go. But I'll hire these helpers that... supposed to be an electrician's helper, and I had one recently. No experience. And I do this it works out well hiring people without experience because you can train them in the way you want them to be, and they usually don't have an attitude. Sometimes they do. But I hired a guy recently, and no experience whatsoever. And I walk up on the job, and I'm meeting with the foreman, and you know, we're making some decisions about how things are going to happen. This helper's just kind of, you know, yeah, I agree with that. And I'm trying to be kind, and I said, don't you have a job to do over there? You need to be nailing up your boxes over there and drilling it, because he's wanting to be involved in the decision-making process and the responsibility that the foreman has before he's even done anything to prove that he's ready to do that sort of thing. Isn't that how it works in the real world? That we don't attain responsibilities, we don't attain the benefits of the experience until we've actually had the experience. And my interpretation of this parable, for what it's worth, is that what Jesus is saying here is the apostles are asking to have their faith increased, and he's saying, all right, if you have this kind of faith, a faith that is willing to grow, that starts out small, but willing, then this is going to happen. But what you need to do is you need to serve me. If you serve me, and if you put my will first, and if you do all these things, then your faith will be increased. What is that? You know, we have the expression in weightlifting, no pain, no what? no gain. What does that mean? It means that if you want to build muscle, if you want to get fit, you've got to make yourself uncomfortable. You've got to do things that you don't really want, that your body is rebelling against, that are painful. And you've got to build that muscle up before it can. You don't just go and lift 200 pounds. You know, you start with what? 40 pounds. Then you move up to 60 and to 80 until you're capable of lifting that kind of weight. That's the way it works in the real world. And it's the same way in employment and things such as that. You know, I was going to have another illustration or something I wanted to say, but
it requires
effort. And if, you know, if we don't get anything else out of this lesson, here's the point. Our faith in God only grows in response to exercising the faith we already have. You know, here's what I was going to say. You don't say, you know, I'll go on a diet when I lose weight. You don't say, I'll start exercising once I get in shape. That's backwards, isn't it? You don't say, I'm going to do this once my faith increases. I'm going to, you know, start greeting visitors once my faith increases. I'm going to start, you know, I'll teach the little ones once my faith increases. I'll wait on the table once my faith increases. I'll put more money in the contribution plate once. That's getting it backwards. It's doing those things that allows our faith to increase. It's going out on those limbs. It's making ourselves uncomfortable. It's doing things that are inconvenient that I would rather not do. I remember, I became a Christian when I was 19 years old. And I remember, it wasn't long. One of the elders came up to me and asked me, he said, he put me down for a closing prayer. 3 weeks later, it was on the thing. I'm like, oh, it tormented me. I'm telling you, I said I would do it because I was asked to do it. But I wish he'd just had to do it the next day. It would have been a lot easier. But for 3 weeks, I'm thinking, I got to get up in front of people and say a prayer. And I practice it and I memorize things. I didn't know I could actually go up with a sheet of paper at the time, or I would have done that. And then after a while, they asked me to do a short talk, and I was tormented again. And you go, why did they ask Rick to do that? Because he won't shut up now. But the point is that we don't just, you know, start by lifting 200 pounds. We start by doing these little things that God asks us to do in His kingdom, in service to Him. And we do things that make us uncomfortable. Now, not everybody can do everything. We understand that, don't we? Not everybody's wired the same. You know, I hire guys that are not meant to be electricians, and I have to let them go sometimes. And I'm not using that wired as a pun. But you know, we can't all do everything. But we can all do something. And sometimes we can do a lot more than we realize we can do if we put our faith in God and not in our abilities. And I think that's, you know, and I think that's really the point, my interpretation that Jesus is making with this parable. You serve me. You wait on me. You come in from the field. After you've been working, you keep working. You keep exercising your faith. And then you can sit down at the table. Then your faith will increase. And the only way I can make sense of what he says here in the context of what he said prior to that and their request, because I don't know how it fits otherwise. And Earl, and I, you know, if you have an opinion about that, we can talk about it later. But that's the reason I'm saying that I think they're requesting something that is not reasonable. And he's dealing with that, saying, here's what you need to understand. So any comments about it? Les?
Well, a verse came to my mind that kind of is consistent with what you're saying, and this is from 1 John. It says, now by this we know that we know him, if we keep his commandments. He who says, I know him, does not keep his commandments, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. But whoever keeps his word, truly the love of God is perfected in him. By this we know that we are in him. So it's kind of like, you know, do the commandments. You don't just think about it, but actually do it. And the more you do it, the closer you get.
And all these things, you made me think of John 17:17. Sanctify them in thy truth. What? Thy word is truth. The longer we abide in it, you know, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed now by the renewing of our minds. That's by the exercising of our faith in his word that it is what it claims to be and that it can transform us. Elaine?
It's easy just to give lip service to all these warm, fuzzy feelings we have, you know, but in James it says you don't just say be warm and be filled. You've got to actually live by those words and do something.
And you know, and I would say we've got to step out of our comfort zone at times. Personal evangelism, that's a tough one. That's a lot of us in the past and even at times, it's not the easiest thing to do to talk to somebody about your faith, to present the gospel to them. The more you do it, though, the more faith you have to do it and the more comfortable you are doing it. All of these things fit together. Jesus said in Luke 19:26, to everyone who has, more shall be given. And I think that's kind of the point there, that you know, we won't go to the negative side of that. If you don't have it, it's going to be taken away. But if we have it and we exercise it, then we're going to get more. And that's, I think, related to faith as well. If we don't exercise it, if we're not doing things that are making us uncomfortable, then maybe we're really not growing. You know, if we're not experiencing the pain, it seems to me we may not be getting the gain. So let's quickly... question 12, considering the overall context of the passage, to whom specifically does Jesus apply this parable and what application does he make?
Disciples, the apostles.
The apostles. And what is the application? That when you've done everything, talking to the apostles themselves, when you've done everything you can do, what is their response supposed to be? We are unprofitable, we are unworthy. And the word unworthy there, my understanding is that the literal Greek is good for nothing. That's the way the apostles were supposed to see themselves, good for nothing. When we've done all that God has commanded us to do, no matter how great our faith is, no matter how much we think we have served him, we still stand condemned before him, but for the blood of Jesus Christ. Because we can't balance the scales. It doesn't matter how faithful we've been in our lives. We will never balance the scales and earn that seat at the table. That seat at the table comes through the blood of Christ primarily. But it's only by his grace that we are worth anything. And we're always in debt to God. I mean, it's really a losing transaction on God's end when you think about it. He had to give his son. For us who are sinful, rebellious, unworthy creatures. And that's the way we're going to remain. And that's the way, if the apostles are told to see themselves this way, then how can I think anything differently?
Sometimes we hear people make comments, maybe at a funeral, like, if anybody ever went to heaven, he did. The implication is he was such a good person.
He's up here.
He's up here. If anybody made it, he did. And the implication also is that he's making it to heaven because he's up here, because he was good. If he made it to heaven, it's because he was
good. And one real quick thing, go ahead and ring the bell again. I'll make it quick, but put pressure on me. But did the apostles ever get a little big-headed at times? Yeah. Hey, you know, let us be on your right hand and your left hand. Why don't you call down fire upon these people? Things such as that. And Jesus is saying, you know, you all are the ones, you know, they're the cream of the crop when it comes to serving him. He said, don't get a big head about it. Don't offend these little ones. Remember, they're the ones. They're striving to seek to serve me. If you offend them, you know, then you're in trouble. Better if a millstone were hung around your neck and you cast into the sea, he said somewhere. So I think that's how that all fits together. That's my interpretation of the parable. Do with it what you will. It seems to fit to me. Earl and I will have a discussion after about, you know, I concede that it could be not an unreasonable request, but anyway, Jesus does seem to say that here's how you increase your faith, by serving and going out on limbs, I think. Thank you for your time and your attention and patience with me.